Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you guys are well and enjoying these sports. Like that's the great thing. Like we have perspective of things. It's really, really important. You gotta have perspective on it. And last night's a perfect example. Like we can get caught up in what Ty Lue and the LA Clippers didn't do, right? We can totally get caught up in that. Or we can just go, hey, here's one of the worst franchises historically in the NBA playing without their star player, and they had him. They had him. And they were not the better team most of the night, but they had a one-point lead with the ball, 8 seconds and change to go, and Paul George at the free throw line, and, well, you know what happened since. I think the same perspective could be given to the Suns, right? It's been 11 years since they lost in the Western Conference Finals. Since then, they won 40, 33, 25, 48, 39, 23, 24, 21, 19. And of course, last year they got red hot in the bubble, but still missed the playoffs, or the play-in tournament. And this year, well, they finished in first place in their division. They got the second seed in the West. They won 51 out of 72 games. And they're in the conference semis. And they have a 2-game lead. And they've done it without Chris Paul these first 2 games. And oh, yeah, by the way, right, in addition to the last decade, Suns games have really been Laker, quasi-Laker home games, right? In addition to all that, we're now celebrating with a full house, great atmosphere. That place has been a zoo. That place has been a zoo. Let's take you to the Valley where Jody Eller joins us. Fox Sports 910 in Phoenix. It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Jody, first, like before we get into what actually took place at the end of the game last night, what's your reaction been like to how well the Suns have played without Chris Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's surprising to everybody that it's been kind of seamless. And Campaign, who is, you know, his story's well known, was playing in China in the G League a year ago, and Monty Williams calls him up out of, you know, basically necessity to get an extra body in the bubble for the Suns, and he's turned that into one of the, you know, starring roles last night, leading all scorers, basically being their offensive flotation device for 3.5 quarters where, hey, D-Book, you're 5 of 16, just coming onto my life raft. I got you 29 points. And it's really incredible what Chris Paul's impact as just a human being and a basketball player is beyond having him, needing him to be on the floor. It really is incredible that his impact and leadership is present even when he's not even in the same state.
You know, it's what's interesting about last night is, And I think people have grown to really respect Monty Williams, but like he really the whole package. I mean, really the whole package. It's not just, and obviously they're going to have to figure out a way where when they do these reviews, teams don't get timeouts when they don't have timeouts, right? I mean, it's a big problem. But the thought that in what a minute he can draw something up, and maybe they've run it previously, but draw something up. And obviously the execution, the defense, but it worked. But that was, some of these head coaches have assistants that draw that stuff up. And everyone knows about Monty, the person, and the relationships he has. But to be able to draw something up, get it to work, win a game, I mean, this guy is going to be deity status if they win the whole thing.
He really is. And there's a couple things about that last play. First of all, before the Valley Oop took over, somebody suggested to me it should have been called the Full Monty, because Monty Williams in the huddle before the timeout, reminding DeAndre Ayton, you know, building his confidence up, dialing the play up. One of the weaknesses of Monty Williams this season in the regular season, and I say weaknesses in air quotes, has been some of his play calling come out of timeouts and late game situations. They've run a lot of very heavy Devin Booker isolation basketball. That's even with Chris Paul on the floor. They've called timeouts. They've gone heavy ISO. They've tried to go hero ball with Devin Booker, and he made a few of those, but he's missed a few of those this year as well. Not only did Monty Williams dial up a perfect play on the Valley Oop, but also the Mikal Bridges three at the top of the key. He got Mikal Bridges an open three from the corner moments before that Mikal Bridges missed. That rebound led to the review, which led to the alley-oop diagramming and the new timeout. But Devin Booker, who being willing to be a decoy at this stage of his career, where he has craved nothing more than that moment, where he has sought nothing more than to be the guy in the biggest moment of the season, here he is with a broken nose, more than likely, voluntarily, willingly setting a back screen on a seven-footer where he knows he's going to get crushed. He does it. Everyone in the building, I don't care what everyone says in hindsight, Doug, everyone watching, everyone part of that game, thought the Suns were setting a screen to pop open Devin Booker for a turnaround jumper, Kevin Durant style, with 0.9 seconds left. And Monty Williams, we see this in football a lot, where the coach picks the right time to run the right trick play. This was like the Philly special, but it was the Valley Oop. It wasn't the Super Bowl, but for Suns fans, it felt like it last night.
Yeah, I will tell you that the back end of that play is if they switch, then Booker pops out and he catches and shoots the basketball. Like that's the so it technically was for Booker, but you're using him using the fact that the Clippers guarded exactly the way he thought they would, which is they weren't switching off of Booker, and that's a mistake by the Clippers. And because Batum didn't leave, it ends up being a wide open dunk. As Ayton did a great job of throwing Zubac into him. So the one thing is it was actually technically, it's like it's an either or, you know, if he's open, you throw it to the rim. If not, you throw it to Book and you see if he can make one. How big was that to go? And can, you know, all these things considered, if it's 1-1, there's a different feeling today. How big was that? Do you think, I mean, what would it have been like had they not made that last shot?
Yeah, it's interesting. The other side of this coin is, you know, it's been easy for the Suns. I mean, it's been tense at times. It's not like they've been running willy-nilly. They've met a little bit of resistance, but they swept the Nuggets. Once Anthony Davis went down, they basically ran the table on the Lakers. It doesn't feel like it can be this easy. And I know it's not simple or easy for the players, but I mean, if this is 1-1 and head back to L.A., you're talking about a best-of-five where three of those games are in Los Angeles. And at that point, you know, Chris Paul and Kawhi Leonard are basically in an arms race to get back on the floor. We know now that CP3 is almost certainly going to be back on the floor for Game 3. But, yeah, if it's 1-1, this is the first – it would have been really the first time since Game 3 of the Lakers series where the Suns would have felt that pressure that typically forges that championship medal. But this Suns team – has avoided that kind of postseason tension. They've just been so much better than the teams they're facing. And I think Clippers 2-0, I know the history, I know the record they set this year with coming back from 0-2, but, you know, the Jazz had a backbone made of mashed potatoes, and the Mavericks are a one-man band. This Suns team is considerably different than both of those teams the Clippers came back on.
Are they... We have seen point guards come back. Now, most of the guys, guards, people that have come back and played are coming off of injury. This is coming off of illness or testing positive. Are we sure the Suns will be better when they get CP3 back?
I think you saw yesterday exactly how the Suns can be better with Chris Paul. And that is in the final minutes of halves, quarters, and even the game where he comes in and is just a steadying presence. It's not, you know, Devin Booker mad scrambled, Devin Booker, you know, fight through double team. It feels like his presence has a calming impact on the entire team. He's steady. He's waited his entire career. I can't wait to see how the Chris Paul Rondo rivalry flares up in this. It's been a chippy game. I would imagine, Doug, and you would know better than me, I would think the Clippers' best course of action if Kawhi Leonard's not back for Game 3 is to muck it up even more. I mean, to dial up that chippiness and the Patsev and the Rondo up to a 15 on a scale of 1 to 10. And Chris Paul, I think one interesting thing I'm curious to see with Chris Paul is, can he keep his emotions in check? This is a huge moment for him. Second Western Conference Finals. 2-0 against a Clippers franchise and some Clippers players that he has a very, you know, personal, professional animus towards. So I think his presence should mostly be felt in the steadying presence. He's not going to be the frenetic scoring energy of campaign. He's not going to be the guy that's, you know, the spark plug off the bench or something. But I do think when you get into those final set plays, when the game slows down, Chris Paul's steadiness, his composure is going to be where the Suns are going to need him, whether either this series or certainly if they're fortunate enough to get beyond into the NBA Finals.
Awesome, awesome stuff. Hey, listen, Joey, this is going to be – oh, by the way, I get Suns and four guy we all had fun with, but like the Suns having the PSAs with people talking about, you know, let's not beat the crap out of each other in the stands. Like it's a kind of hard double standard there. Like, well, let's reward Suns and four guy. And on the other hand, nobody else can kick the crap out of anybody else in the stands.
Right. Well, I guess they would say Devin Booker is the one that basically rewarded the Suns more, but I agree 100%. It's like, hey, you know what? Let's just enjoy the moment. There's the time for lecturing your fans. I don't think right now, when they're providing arguably the biggest home court advantage in the NBA postseason, is necessarily the right time. We can all accept and agree that fan fights happen in the stands, regardless if it's the NBA playoffs and the Suns or elsewhere. So let's just enjoy the ride.
Fair enough. Jody, really appreciate you joining us. At Radio Jody is his Twitter handle. You can check him out on Fox Sports 910. Jody, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, you're the best, man. Appreciate it.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
And screw up right with Indiana boys. Hey, did you guys see this? Ramos, you'll appreciate this one. I'll have to text it to you. Have you seen this summer of 87, summer and fall of 87, all the people that played at Madison Square Garden? Have you seen that?
I have not. I do remember the summer of 87, though. But
you do. I was 11. I don't remember that well.
That was the year after I graduated from high school. It was the summer of 87. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I graduated in June of 87.
How old are you?
Well, I just turned 51.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. I was class of 87, St. Francis High
School. How old were you when
you
graduated grade high school?
I was 17.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't, because I was born in September, so I could go either way. I could have been class of 88 or class of 87 or however that worked back then, yeah.
Okay, so starting in March and ending in December, so this is like spring, this is 1 year at Madison Square Garden. You ready?
Okay.
Okay, Rat and Poison. That's funny, it's Rat Poison. Iron Maiden.
Okay.
Eric Clapton, Huey Lewis in the News, Jose Feliciano, Luther Vandross, Bryan Adams, Duran Duran, Paul Simon, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Madonna, Bon Jovi, Billy Idol and the Cult together, The Cure, Beastie Boys and Run DMC together, Motley Crue and Whitesnake together. Oh, backstage there must have been amazing. Tina Turner and Wang Chung.
Mm.
Everybody have fun tonight?
That's right.
Everybody Wang Chung tonight. Roger Waters. I have no idea. I'm sure very, very important. David Bowie. Under Pressure. Whitney Houston. The Grateful Dead. U2. Pink Floyd. Eddie Murphy. The Cars. Rush. Yes. And Depeche Mode.
Wow. It's a lot of great bands, some so-so, but a lot more great than so.
Okay, so if I was to give me your top five in order.
Of those bands that you were there, you said, I would say U2. I definitely would see Motley Crue. I saw Tom Petty and Heartbreakers, so I'd say Tom Petty and Heartbreakers. That's three. The Cure. Did you say Depeche Mode?
Depeche Mode, yeah.
Yeah, I would see them as well. So those would be the five. From what I remember, there was a lot of names there. So,
okay, so I would say if I wanted to see a concert at Madison Square Garden, like let's not, it's hard because we're talking 87.
Yeah.
87 was peak Madonna, I think, right?
Yeah, she was at the height of her fame.
She wasn't maybe, yeah, I don't know if she's hype, but she's, Huey Lewis in the News is pretty amazing back then.
I saw them as well. Yeah, they were very good. I saw them on the sports tour in 85.
Sports 85. So you'd still, they'd still have all those songs.
They
right?
had that sports.
Let me play you something from a new album.
Yeah.
You're like, no. Sports. We want sports. I mean, Joshua, they, U2 Joshua Tree.
Yeah, that was a great tour, by the way. The 87 Joshua Tree tour. Awesome. One of my highlights of my life.
Really?
Yeah. That tour, I saw him at the sports arena, LA Sports Arena.
And lived to tell about it. What? To, yeah. First concert you ever went to?
First concert I ever went to, I saw. I saw Men at Work in 1982. I was 12 at the Greek Theater.
Greek Theater's a great place to watch concerts. Great, but my sister used to help run the Greek Theater.
So really?
It was right at the end of high school. I was in college at the time. It was actually my year at junior college around here, so I saw so many shows at the Greek. That's an amazing venue. Coming to Los Angeles, I don't know if it's already up and running again, but the Greek is an unbelievable outdoor amphitheater to see things. It's in the same park as the Griffith Observatory. And Ramos, I know you know this, but it's like Dodger Stadium, the Greek, and the Griffith Park Observatory, like all right there in this kind of hilly, I wouldn't call it mountain, like overlooking downtown LA. It's pretty phenomenal.
It is. Parking at the Greek isn't the greatest.
Greatest. I mean, look, Dodgers, you're going up a hill. What do you expect?
True.
Gavin, first concert.
I think it was Goldfinger. The
Goldfinger. That's good. But what was their first big? That was their big song.
I think it was Superman. And I went to it because their song was in the Tony Hawk Pro Skater soundtrack.
Nice.
And my brother and his friends were going, so they drug me along.
They were. I remember them as a ska band, right?
Yes. Yeah. Which, you know, growing up in Orange County, Southern California, very popular. Yeah.
No. It was mid '90s. That was my high school days, and they were big, real big fish. Obviously, No Doubt. And then you know you have. Santeria, why am I blanking?
Sublime.
Sublime's like the guy.
Karaoke right? favorite.
It's big. Buy your first concert.
REO Speedwagon. Wow. Central Wisconsin Valley Fair.
How old?
I was in high school. Yeah, probably like 16, something like that, 17.
My parents were in Vegas. We were in Vegas in a basketball tournament, and they went to see Jeffrey Osborne.
Yeah.
That was like my first concert.
Can you woo woo?
Can you woo woo woo? Can you woo woo woo? What's crazy about it is my dad ended up coaching Jeffrey Osborne's son in AAU, and Jeffrey Osborne's I wouldn't say we're friends. He was friends with my dad. Like an amazing guy. Like just a great, he has a couple of great songs. I mean, actually, those are good songs. I might have to play a couple. Anyway, and then my first concert, I actually ended up getting dropped off at. Was Tony and Bobby Brown in Santa Ana. Me and Miles Simon got dropped off at the concert and then picked back up. And yeah, that was not a, I mean, there was nothing terrible, but that was definitely not a concert that like 13-year-old boys should be at. I mean, I felt like Bobby Brown was picking his ladies out of the audience.
Oh man.
Yeah, and Tony, like all you're talking about, feels good. Remember that song? Yeah, right. So, but I don't think that was about what we thought that it was about at the time, anyway. Okay, best concert. Ramos, best concert you've ever been to?
Well, I think, like I said, I think that the U2 concert, you know, Prince was really good too. He was exceptional at the Staples Center back in, I think, 2008, somewhere around there. He was unbelievable. Yeah, but U2 is the 87 U2 Joshua Tree was one of the best I've ever seen.
I went to U2 Pop Mart at the Coliseum, and it wasn't good because they were playing a bunch of songs from the Pop Mart.
Yeah.
It wasn't. But when they played The Streets Have No Name,
you were into
Oh, it was great. Yeah. It was great. All right, Gavin, best concert you've ever been to?
I saw The Cure at Coachella in 2006. That was really cool.
Yeah.
Coachella and The Cure.
I know.
Okay. All right. What about you there, Byron?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was Hall & Oates a few years back, and then I saw Tears for Fears.
Tears for Fears.
Yes, I mean, it was, me and my wife even said, and they, Hall & Oates was so good the second time. We both love, we both love Hall & Oates, and we both love Tears for Fears, and then when they did that combo tour were like, heck yeah, we're going. And then Tears for Fears is just amazing. So much that you're just like, let's go tomorrow night. Let's go to the next night.
You follow them around. Yeah.
Also,
like, you're a Tears for Fears groupie?
Well, you know, it's one of those where they play all the hits as well. But I also saw George Michael down in Orange County on his 25 Live tour.
George Michael, 25 Live, not yeah. Wham.
No, there's no Ridgely.
Yeah. I'm a big George. I was a big George Michael fan, like Faith. I love Freedom. Freedom's a great song. Really good song, Freedom. Tears for Fears is, they did the shout, let it all out, right? Yep. That's them, right?
Yeah.
And everybody wants to rule the world. That's a good band.
Yeah, they're great.
That's almost a lighter on every song kind of thing. Now everybody does the phone thing.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Vito texts me and says, Air Supply, 1980 at the Greek was his first show. He was five. And then Sergio Mendes in Brazil 66 at the Hollywood Bowl in 06 is his favorite show. So anyway, Max Homa joins us, star on the PGA Tour. Santa Clarita's own, actually Valencia, California. Same thing. It's to those of us who don't live in the area, Max, it's like, where is that? That's the place that people live, and apparently near Six Flags, right? That's really what it is. First concert you ever went to is where?
Oh, San Diego. Oh my gosh, where is it? It was Motley Crue open for, I'm having a serious brain fart. Steven Tyler. I'm blanking.
Was it outdoors or indoors? Because the San Diego Sports
Arena. It was outdoors. I'm thinking it wasn't indoors. It was outdoors. I was young, so I'm having a hard time.
Well, you're having a hard time because you were at a Motley Crue concert, and I'm guessing the second hand destroyed all your brain cells. That's really what it was.
Yeah, maybe that's what's so messed up with me. It started to make sense. Aerosmith, thank you. My brain just turned on. That's good.
There you go. Best concert you've ever been to.
Gosh, I went to this really like divey bar to watch a J. Cole concert one time way back in the day. That was a lot of fun.
That sounds pretty awesome. I played basketball. I was in that NBA Celebrity All-Star game when I worked at ESPN with J. Cole.
And, oh, I remember.
Yeah, he was a lot younger, but you know, he was like dunking in warm-ups, and I was like, I don't think this guy can play basketball. It was very funny. He was not. It was like one of those, like, he could dunk and he was young, and so people thought he could play. And like, I don't know too much.
You know the real side.
Well, you can just watch when somebody. I'm sure it's like you with golf, right? Like, it's like if you saw me swinging golf clubs, we're like, oh, you're pretty good. And like, yeah, and actually, golf was like, yeah, no, he hasn't. He's terrible.
Yeah, maybe you're
he's,
right.
He's terrible. What'd you think of the setup at Torrey?
I thought it was great. It felt a lot like the Farmers Insurance, honestly. The greens were much firmer and a bit slicker. But tee to green, it was really similar. I thought they did a good job. Would have liked, if I could pick anything, I would have liked 13 on the Thursday-Friday rounds, the only two I played, to play a little bit shorter because I think it's a bit more exciting. But other than that, I thought they nailed it.
Guys, who was it? Was it Bryson? Bryson blew up on 13 on Sunday. I mean, those guys Sunday hit the turn like, oh my gosh, that thing was hard.
Yeah, there's like an hour period. Nobody can get the ball in the hole. It's wild.
What is that like? What is that like to play a course to where you're like, and I don't know when you're playing, you've won twice, obviously winning it, winning in LA for your second win was amazing. But what is that like when everybody's struggling? Are you able to process that everybody's struggling with the course? Or are you so focused on yourself that you don't even know what else is going on?
It's mostly like selfishly yourself. You're just kind of, U.S. Opens are different, man. I know I've been doing a bunch of this stuff with Gillette, and it was just funny because I was thinking about like, you know, you're sweating from like the moment you wake up, kind of knowing you're going to be kind of playing 18 holes of hell in a way. You kind of get to the course and you know it's going to be a grind. So I guess it helps you there. You put your mindset in a good spot. But once you start playing, it's just you, your caddy, and the golf course. And you're just kind of trying to pick it apart and, you know, if you get out of position, you got to get back in position ASAP. And it feels like when you do get a chance to make a birdie, you got to take advantage of it. It's kind of mental warfare in that regard. But it's hard to get too caught up in what everybody else is doing, just because anybody can have a blow up hole at any moment. So you're really never out of it unless you kind of play your own self out of it.
You know, Matthew Wolf joined us yesterday. Another SoCal guy, obviously, and you know, he took two, and he's younger than you. He took 2 months away. To kind of mentally, he told us to reset, right? Like, he was just not feeling any sort of joy from the sport. And like, golf is, it's very much like baseball. There's so much failure in golf, right? So much failure in golf. How are you able to process that failure and not let it get into you to a bad mental place?
Probably practice. Getting used to failing in a way. Trying to take more good than the bad, because in golf, if you tried to only focus on you know, the bad, there's just too much of it built up. We don't win. Even the best golfer I think of all time, Tiger, has won like 20% of his golf tournaments, so that means he's losing considerably more often. So you try and leave the events and think about the things you did well. I'm obviously always trying to improve, but even the best in the world don't win every week, so it's tough. But it's just kind of part of the job, part of the game. I think anybody who's played golf kind of knows, even in one round of golf, that there's going to be some bad. You just got to make sure that you're really positive, focusing on the good, because when you do have those wins, since they come so few and far between, it's kind of euphoric. So it's worth kind of some of the losses, I would say.
What, you mentioned Tiger. When you won the Genesis, he was there. It was right before the accident. And you talked about how, like, it's like a deity, right? Like, you're just like, it's a god standing there next to you. But what is that like to be like, kind of that was the last day anybody saw him in public. And then all of a sudden after that, you know, I don't know if he'll have a golf career after that terrible accident. For you emotionally, what's it been like to process?
Yeah, it was really eerie. I remember I landed and got a text and everyone's kind of telling me what had just happened, and I couldn't believe it. Just like you mentioned, I saw him the day prior, and you know, for me, just getting to talk to him, I was so appreciative of. He's done a zillion things for not only me but for the whole golf community, and his, you know, efforts in the game. And to think for a moment, you know, he might not be around at all, let alone just a golf course, was scary. I'm glad he seems to be doing so much better. But it was a lot to process for everybody. I know, like, that was on everybody's mind the next week out in Florida at concession, and it's scary. But we're just all really rooting for him to just hopefully just go back and at some point be able to move around and run around with his kids and just have a life, because he's done enough for the game. If he decides to never pick up a golf club again, he's done way more than we ever deserved. You know, so he's been just an absolute blessing for the tour, and you know, and for just the fans to get to watch. I feel like as a kid growing up, as a fan of the game, there was nothing more fun than watching Tiger Woods play golf. And like I said, I just hope that he can be healthy at some point for his own family. So obviously we're rooting for him, but it's been nice to see him seemingly in good spirits.
He did. I mean, look, he made golf cool. I mean, that's really, you know, like, yeah. I grew up in Orange County, and you know, Tiger was, we were same age, and I just, like, I remember golf as, you know, I mean, even the late Payne Stewart, right? Like the outfits and the hats and whatever, like, it was just, I wasn't a country club kid, and it wasn't anything. He had this ability to make it cool, right? Like, he had swag. Golfers didn't have swag. It's really amazing, the kind of transformation that I don't know if a lot of people outside of golfers in your generation understand exactly where golf was to where it is now.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he made walking through my quad in my high school my freshman year in a purple golf polo, because that was our team's, you know, shirt, like, way less miserable. So they could say, hey, what do you do? Oh, you play golf? I'm like, yeah, go watch this guy Tiger Woods play and tell me this is not a cool sport to play or to watch. So, you know, he fist pumping all over the place, in great shape, you know. It just made it cool. I honestly don't know if I would have stuck out golf as a young kid if it wasn't for him, because I think it would have just been, you know, at that time everyone's calling it an older man's game. And yeah, as a kid, to be able to keep going with that, it would be kind of odd almost. So he did not make it that. He made it the opposite. He made every kid want to have a putt on the last hole of a golf tournament so they could do an uppercut fist pump like he always did.
Okay, the 72 club, right? So are you mean to tell me that Gillette deodorant really lasts 72 hours? 72 hours?
72 hours. As a man, I live out in Arizona, which is basically on the sun, and I'll tell you, it works. It's hot, man, but it works, and it's this amazing. They're obviously a major brand. They've been pursuing excellence. They've been killing it, so I'm honored to be a part of it, and I'm also just thankful to be able to use the product so that my wife does not leave me every time I come home for practice.
Favorite person to play with on the tour? Like in an event, not to play on a Monday or a Tuesday. On a Thursday, you see you're playing with them, you're like, this is going to be a fun day.
Rory's really fun to play with. Rory McIlroy, he's just like, he brings a buzz to the event. So, you know, if you're playing with him, you get to play in front of a bunch of people. And he, you know, typically puts on a show. He's an amazing golfer, but he's a great dude. So he's fast. He's just easy to play with. And then my best friend out here, Taylor Gooch,
Gooch.
You know, you always want to play with your buddies. You always want to hang out with them. So he's an easy pick. He plays fast, too. We usually just say anybody fast. So those two are some of the quicker players. So they got to keep it moving.
Hit the ball. Like we're not going to. Did you ever play with Sergio when it was really bad?
I did not. I was a little young, but I remember him getting heckled in New York.
God, just hit the. Now, are you a Duff? Are you a Duff tomorrow? Is that you're with?
I am. Yeah, I'm with Duff.
I love some off-air stories. Tell Gooch I said hello. Us Oklahoma State guys gotta stay together.
Yes, sir.
Hit them long and straight. Enjoy the Travelers. By the way, we mentioned this to Wolf yesterday. No call from you. I don't know. Me and Dan Beyer, we're part of a foursome. We won the the Farmers Pro-Am on the South Course. Other people playing the North. You didn't call me for any local course knowledge. Nothing. Now you're up at Travelers,
man,
up in Cromwell.
That wasn't in my notes. I need to know that next time so I can talk to the right people.
I played in Cromwell a dozen times, and this is the first time we've talked. So, listen, you go play blind tomorrow. You pay your caddy, whatever. And then Friday, when you need some tips, I'll send you a couple tips. Fair enough?
Hey, that sounds good. I appreciate the help.
last thing before we let you go. Okay, I want the truth. You grew up in Valencia. Valencia is known for Six Flags. Were you scared of roller coasters as a kid?
I was scared of the loop, like the whatever.
Revolution?
The big loop you would go. Once I did my first one, though, I was hooked on roller coasters. I love it now.
Yeah, you have to. You can't grow up in that area and not be. Max, hit him long and straight tomorrow. Win at Cromwell, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Doug. Take care.
All right, that's Max Homa, help me out, Byer, with my English. The most liked? The most likable.
Well liked, yeah.
Well liked. That's it. Sorry. I just, you ever, you're the synapses are not, you're like, what is, why?
Yes.
I could. Why?
Yep.
It was really hard. It was really hard to, the wrong emphasis and the wrong syllable. Max Homa, good dude. And that was, when he won Genesis, that was really, really cool, right?
Like, yeah. Especially because he had a, it wasn't a tap in, but it was close to a tap in, yeah, that he missed, but then was able to win in the playoff. So.
Yes. I didn't want to bring that up, but again, that's the life of failure.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
So if you're just joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio, what Ramos does a great job of, and I think Vito helps him out as well. I mean, is it true, Ramos? I mean, do you pick out all the songs yourself?
I love Vito, but I'm going to take full credit on this one. Yeah, not to me.
Okay, is that Real Big Fish? Is that what it is?
No, that's Goldfinger.
Oh, that's Goldfinger?
That was Gavin's Band of Love.
13-year-old Gavin just... skanking to this song. That's what they call
skanking?
It. That's like the ska dance. Yeah.
Ska.
Skanking with ska.
Get your mind out of the gutter, okay?
I just remember what I remember about ska is I went to UC San Diego had the Sun God Festival, right? Sun God Festival. I had a buddy named Nick Maruzos who played basketball at UC San Diego. And so my boy Clay and I, we go down there and we hang out with him and we go to the Sun God Festival. And I think Nick was in the pit, right? And he was in the mosh pit and a couple other guys, like somebody lost a shoe. He come out, he like, hey, dude, you're missing a shoe. Like, ah, it was all right. It was awesome in there. Anyway, I'll never forget this. This is great. So we're sitting there. We're like, hey, Nick, like, we're going to get out of here. He's like, oh, I can't find my wallet. Like, really? Like, yeah, I can't find my wallet. And he's like, I'm like, oh man, how are we going to find it? So we're trying to like go through the pit and like look. And we're like, this is before you had a cell phone where you could see things. Anyway, the lead singer of Real Big Fish. Not Real Big Fish. I mean, it was Real Big Fish. No, it wasn't Real Big Fish. Who was the one who was, they sang Come on, Irene, but they remade, huh? Remake.
Was it the Mighty Mighty Bosstones?
No. Or is it Come on, Eileen? Sorry, Come on, Eileen. But it was a. Well, it was a ska. It was a ska remake. Ska remake.
Yeah,
it
was,
remake.
Was
okay.
It Save Ferris?
Ferris. Oh, that's who it was. Thank you. So Save Ferris has a female lead singer, and she was pretty awesome. I think her name is like Adrienne Knopf or something like that. Adrienne Knopf. I can't remember. Anyway, so we're like searching for this dude's shoe and for it's Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio, and for my buddy Nick's wallet. And Adrienne, lead singer of Save Ferris at the Sun God Festival, says like, hey, Nick Maruzos, here's your Visa. Beers are on you. And we were like, that's so great. Anyway, that's a mosh pit. Anyway, let's get to what the Fox said.
And now.
What does the Fox say?
This was Colin Cowherd earlier today talking about replay at the end of NBA games.
NBA games fly by, except for the last couple minutes of close playoff games. I'm okay with it because they're doing it for a reason. Replay was created to get the call right with 2 minutes left and not screw a team out of a championship. So this play drove me nuts. But I thought about it. Devin Booker, sideline, Patrick Beverley, ball goes out of bounds. Now, 99% of the time in the season, they give it to the offensive team. Why do they do that? The NBA, to keep the game fluid and moving and fast, is going to give that to the offensive player. But they go to the replay with a minute left because we're not going to take a championship from a team. But it would be kind of ridiculous, right? If you did the replay and it went off Booker and you said, yeah, so what? Well, why did you create the replay? So we get the technicalities right very late in games. And I know there's a lot of replays late. NBA games fly by. But they ask you at the end, we're going to get this stuff right.
Yeah, okay, but we're going to do the same thing with NFL games. Look, I think I have the proper adjustment to it, okay? The fact is that, you know, like, if you're going to use replay, it's in an effort to get it right, and you might as well get it right. But I think there is a simple fix to how they handle replay and how you can make it so that it's equitable for both sides and not beneficial for a team to get a timeout. I'll get to that as part of our Suns Clippers game two recap. It's upcoming next in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.